So anybody wants to say something, ask something? You must have some questions. So the tilak, when we put it on the forehead, yeah, it symbolizes the opening of the third eye. Yeah, that's what we call it in like popular culture. So, but like, it is like the, what we call the intuitive mind. Or is what I call our natural knowing. Is it that part of us that knows things naturally? Know them without like arriving at conclusions. It is like a direct knowing. So that is what that symbolizes. Opening that capacity in ourselves to know without a thought process involved. It's called intuition. We all know it. It happens to all of us because we all have it, huh? But like, problem is that we, a lot of the time, we don't trust it. Yeah, and we trust the noise in our minds more. And we trust our own natural knowing. And that's the conflict we live in. Between these two, our natural knowing that actually knows, and then the conditioned mind that doesn't know but just reacts. Yeah, so like when your natural knowing says something and then fear comes in, or guilt comes in, yeah? And then you listen to the guilt or the fear instead of your natural knowing. And this is what happens, and so we don't trust it, we have no relationship to that natural knowing. It is like a stranger. And so it, part of what we do like in yoga and spiritual life is we get to know and trust our natural knowing. That's the process. It happens, we start listening to it. We start observing it. We start to get to know it, and then also we reduce the noise in the mind. And then the voice is not the voice exactly, but the voice of our natural knowing gets louder, more obvious or audible. It's an interesting thing. If we, like when we really don't know what to do, if we can sit down and be really quiet, then we always know. We always know what it is we need to do if we can just be quiet for a moment. What is the right thing? There's part of us that knows this. And so it's important we find a way of listening to that part of us, that part of ourselves. So then we get confused. Fear is stronger, anger is stronger, guilt is stronger, shame is stronger. And so we believe in that. And I was talking with somebody, there is this conflict that exists in us between our like heart and mind, you can call it that. But it's the same thing. It's the knowing and then it's the confused part of who we are. And like we need to train ourselves because like so often it's the confused part that wins the battle, huh? So that's what we do, just tick, and then it opens, and we know, yeah, just like that. It's not that we know everything, it's not like that, our natural knowing, we don't know, it's not like we know everything, it's not certainly we know everything about nuclear physics and astronomy, or you cannot read my mind and all is just, we know what we need to do. Yeah? That's what natural knowing is. It's not sort of like universal, all-knowing everything. Is it like more practical? We know where we need to go, we know what we need to do.
Could I ask a question? So if you've got a problem or an issue and you say go and sit quietly, so if you go and sit quietly and watch the breath and be aware at the moment, or do you contemplate on the issue?
You can do it in a variety of ways, but you can definitely go and sit down and cross your legs and then watch your breath. And then allow all that to sort of rumble on in your mind at the same time. That is a very valid method. It's some way of getting in towards or near that natural knowing. Like, it's a matter of like beginning to distinguish in between the noise and the natural knowing. And so, like, the only place we can do it is in some kind of silence. Otherwise, it can't happen. Like, no, the way our minds normally work, it completely overshadows our natural knowing or our intuitive mind. I mean, we all have experiences where it's very strong and obvious. So it happens to all of us. We know this is a reality. So I think we all know it. That is a part of who we are, but we don't know how to exactly get to it in its like pure form, where we are like really in contact with it and where we have a like real intimate or close trusting relationship with it. And it's something you develop by also by experimenting, like, you know, you like when your intuitive mind tells you something and you're not sure, then you try it out and you see what happens. Yeah? And then sometimes you get it wrong. But this is how we learn. And I think that this is one of our big problems. Like, it's difficult for us to accept that that's how we learn, by making mistakes.
Sometimes I've had it that the mind or whatever it is telling me something, and each time I meditated it's telling me the same thing without me thinking about it.
Yeah.
And until I take action with that thought, it doesn't go away.
No, that's it. But that's also like, then there is already a closeness when that happens. There is always there is already a trust. There is already a connection. There is already a meeting point. And so, and then you become more and more aware of it. Like, the more quiet your mind goes, the less sort of domineering your conditioned mind is, the more the clearer that intuitive part of you comes through. But like, we live in this kind of inner conflict. And I was talking with somebody about it a little bit earlier, and like, is it not something unnatural or unusual? It's something we all live in, this inner conflict. And we have all these forces inside battling away. And this is what we call the divided mind. And that's the mind most of us live with. Like, it's not something that like a few people live with, it's something everybody lives with. The divided mind. And so like the whole process of spiritual practice is to bring the mind together so it becomes one mind instead of many different minds. So all of it is going in one and the same direction. And you can see now, like with your own mind, if you look at it, it's so like it's a very conflicted often the mind. It both maybe even wants the same thing and don't want the same thing both at the same time. It's a situation we often find ourselves in. And so, like the question, how we heal or bring the mind together? That is the question of sadhana, spiritual. And it's possible to create one mind. Why not? It's just simplifying what is already here. That's all we have to do, just simplify. So you think about what that means, simplifying. It means simplifying everything. Simplifying your expectations. Simplifying your desires. Simplifying your reactions. Simplifying, just simplifying. In this natural state, the mind is very simple. With no complications. It's the conditioned mind that's complicated. And so like what we often do when we think of like a spiritual mind, we think of something like even more complicated. But it's not like that. It's just something very simple and straightforward. Like we think of spiritual experience and then we think of something grand, vision or something, but it's not like that. It's something very simple. It's now, here, just with the eyes open. It's simple. It's not something complicated. It's not some fantastic other world of visions and stuff like that. It's simple. That's the spiritual mind, is simple. The other mind, the conditioned one, that's complicated, and that also is what complicates life. It creates all the complications. The mind that grasps and rejects. The mind that judges. The mind that has likes and dislikes, preferences. That's the mind that complicates. The spiritual mind is just present here. There is no complications in it. It's not waiting for anything or expecting anything. It's happy with the moment, the way it is. So that was a lot to get out of Tilak. Yeah. So, but then you know a little bit more about it now.
Could you say something more about the role of the ritual? You said a little bit about it this morning, but it seemed, for me, it seems to kind of make things more complicated again.
No, like I think, you see, the thing when we live in the complicated mind, then we need to employ methods to occupy it. Yeah? Is it, that is what we do. So, like, it helps to focus that complicated mind. Because like one of our problems is we can't focus very easily. Like we sit down and we try and it doesn't happen. You can see it like just in terms of observing the breath, how difficult that can be. You manage for 3 breaths and then your mind is off skiing in the Alps. You know, and then you manage to come back, and then you, after the next 3 breaths, you're surfing in Hawaii, and that is what the mind does. And so, like with all practice, you know, we find ways of aiding or helping the mind to enter into the present moment, and like all of the techniques we do also are like. Designed to help the mind arrive in the present moment. So the whole ritual around the oven serves the same purpose. And if you see like the way the whole thing works, like from we begin to we are in the middle or after the chanting, you will see that your mind is actually spending moments where it doesn't think, where it doesn't project itself, where it becomes quiet. And that's the whole point of it. Yeah? Like with the chanting, for me, all my chanting, and I talked a little bit about it the other day for me is a not about meaning, and for me all my chanting, ironically enough, is to create a silent space inside myself where nothing happens, where I can be with myself in silence. Like all our practices and rituals, they need to serve that purpose. Yeah. They have no other real reason to exist. And so heaven is a construct that is created to serve that purpose. And if you observe it, you can see it works. For a moment you're not thinking. For a moment you stop. Your mind stops thinking. And then you can, just for those moments, maybe rest in yourself. Without that, the constant hammering of the conditioned mind. The doubt, the confusion, the fear, the expectations, the hope, all of that stuff. And then for a moment maybe you can be where you are. It's like practice is something we do just so we become aware of that naturally silent aspect of ourselves. And we begin to make friends with it, or we begin to relax into it, we begin to accept it's part of who we are. Because the problem in lots of ways is that we have moved so far away from it that the silence scares us. But it's naturally who we are. And so we have to find a way of reacquainting ourselves with ourselves. Yeah, we're so identified with the noisy, conditioned mind that we cannot conceive easily of silence as being who we are. So that is a process of reacquainting ourselves with that silence inside. It takes time, and that is why we practice. We do it again. If we go over there today and you maybe even for one second rest in yourself in silence, then that's 1 second. And then if you do it again, maybe that's another second. And then if you do it again, it's another second. It's spending time with yourself. Yeah, in some ways, you know, it's not totally, it's not completely unlike divorcing. Yeah, because that is what we are doing in effect. We're so used to living with the crazy mind, and we can't even imagine living without it. And no matter how crazy it is, then we are deeply attached to it. Yeah, it's just like a marriage. But it's like a dysfunctional marriage. Yeah, like that partner there is just screwing everything up all the time. Creating unhappiness and confusion and fear and guilt and wow. So it's a sort of kind of a process of divorce. Slowly you examine that, the partner you're traveling with there, called the crazy mind. And you begin to think that I need to find somebody else to live with, you know? It's just too much trouble, this thing. Yeah? It keeps taking me down the wrong roads. So, and then that's what, slowly you begin to move away from it. It's not it's not something you decide. It's like a process you enter into. little by little you see the craziness of it, and then little by little you let it go. And then more and more you spend time in the silence of yourself. And little by little you find it more companionable. So, like I was talking with somebody else, I don't know if she's thought about it in the meantime. I said, like, the your emotions, they're like, it's like a hybrid car. You know, it recharges the batteries by braking. Yeah, by that friction, it recharges the batteries. And your negative emotions are the same. Yeah. It's the friction you create around them that recharges them, the batteries in them. It works the same way. Like, once you stop the friction, then the batteries, they will run flat. Yeah?
Can I ask a bit more?
Yeah, you can.
But it's just, so the other day you talked about, you used the example of listening to punk music or the Beatles or, you know, not understand it.
Yeah.
And so some people would listen to punk and love it and feel kind of at peace somehow, or somebody else would need to listen to opera.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, do you see these rituals as for everybody, or if you're struggling with a ritual, does that mean it's not for you and another practice might be better? Or?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Yeah. I think with all these practices, it's really, really important. Don't think they're a religion. And I don't think you should never do it under compulsion. No, that's not the point of them. Like, you got to find a practice that works for you. That's what's important, yeah? Like, if you have no... For some people, maybe it's asanas. Or maybe for some people it's Buddhism, I don't know, yeah? And then for some people, maybe it's just watching the breath. For some people, maybe it's chanting, singing. For some people, maybe it's havan. So, like, what I do here is I introduce you to various things, yeah, and I take you on a journey. And that's really what I'm doing. I'm just showing you possibilities, and then see what works for you. But also try things more than once. Yeah, because like often, for example, when you meet something, there is a reaction to it if it doesn't fit into the sort of picture of the world or life you have in your mind. So then we react to it, and that is also, that's not a useful sort of, it's not a useful meeting point, and it's also not the useful departure point. So like, If you drop something, then there is no problem with that. But there is a problem if you drop it from a reactive attitude. Yeah? You understand the difference? Yeah. So, like, if something makes you react, then, you know, use it. Like, it's an important moment. Like, certainly you're touching something in yourself you cannot easily normally touch. And so, like, the reactive mind is not something useful for us. So, like, when we see that we discover it, it's a good moment, because it means then we can work with it, or we can let go of it. And it's the same with everything in the mind. Like, it's very easy to sit on the meditation mat and let go of anger and I don't know what people do, feed the hungry ghosts and all this sort of stuff, but like, is it not possible to let go of anger if you're not angry? What is there to let go of? Yeah? If you're not reacting to something, then how do you let go of the reactive mind? So, like, all this is not theoretical. Like, it's real work. Like, you meet your reactive mind, and then you cannot just stay on the surface of it. You gotta look a little bit deeper at what's happening. And then you got to sit with the feelings that are generated from all this. Like, where does it come from exactly? Yeah, because reaction is only like the symptom. Is it not the cause? So, like, when you meet something and you say, "Oh, I don't like this," or "I don't want to do this," then there's something more behind it. And so you've got to go a little bit deeper, and it's not so much a matter of analyzing it. It's a willingness to sit in the feelings that generate the reaction. Sit with the discomfort that creates in you. Yeah, maybe it's fear. Maybe you react from fear. So, or maybe you react from expectation. Maybe you react as a kind of a self protective thing. So, like, then you got to sit in those feelings, and then you have to look at them, and then you have to decide whether they have value or no value. Like, do they belong in the here and now? Have they got anything to do with the here and now? Are they just remnants of the past intruding? And, like, the reactive mind is always remnants of the past intruding. See, there is no problem with rejecting something. No, I do it all the time. People say, "Smoke dope." I say, "No." People say, "You want a beer?" I say, "No." So, but it is not a reactive rejection. It's intelligent. Yeah? I don't need to smoke or drink or go to parties. So I say, "No, thank you." So it's like learning to use your own reactive moments in a positive way. And so, like, for sadhana they're important. For spiritual practice they're important. There's so much of the mind that's hidden, we cannot get at it. You cannot decide to react. Yeah, you cannot decide to get angry. You cannot decide to fall in or out of love. It's not, the mind doesn't work that way. So then that means we have to use the opportunity when it comes, and then look at that stuff in ourselves, and then not get trapped in it. When anger arises, like, in your mind, you have to be willing to sit in the heat of the anger and feel it. So you spend time with it without living it out. Yeah? So this is a different way of working with it. Like, normally we live it out, maybe, or maybe we suppress it, or we try to get away from it, or we try to tell ourselves, "Oh, I'm not really angry, or I should be angry, or it's not right to be angry." And, like, I say to people, if you get angry, then and you get really angry with somebody, then just go somewhere and sit down, and then say loud, like, 1,000 times, just say, like, "I hate you. Like, I hate you," and then really feel it and say, "I really hate you." And just when you get to the around 756 time, you think, "Wow, this is really silly." Yeah? And so it's allowing yourself to be what you are, but in a non-destructive way. Is finding a way of doing that. That is called practice. Don't be afraid of the mind.
You've told us that one before.
I know. I always tell it.
I've tried it.
How far did you get?
I don't know how far I got, but it was quite funny.
It is quite funny. Yeah, of course it is.
I'm angry, you know, and sort of... And in the end, it was just silly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a way we can see our own foolishness. And it's important because, like, I mean, the problem with all this stuff is we take it so seriously. And with maybe just a little bit of imagination, we can see it for what it is. Quite silly. Yeah. Okay, should we sing a song?
Yes.
Yeah. Sri Ganesha. Do we know this?
Gam gam na kadaye
Time.
keeping the eyes closed. Chanting Om three times. Deep inhalation.